Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron, and I am officially back from my hiatus.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we are speaking with Marjorie Turner Hallman. Marjorie is a prolific writer. We have a few of her books on our shelves. Marjorie is a freelance writer-editor who loves the outdoors, uses hiking poles to help keep her balance on the trail, and has completed four books in the Easy Walks Guidebook series. Her latest book, My Liturgy of Easy Walks, is a memoir, Meditations on Learning to Live with a Changed Life. A native Floridian, she came north for college and snow. She has appeared on Boston's ABC News show, Chronicle. Oh, that's the name of the show, sorry. And Boston CBS Channel 2, the Boston Globe, local radio and cable TV shows, and has been published in local, regional, and national publications. Marjorie is joining us today to talk about hemiplegia. Welcome to our show, Marjorie.
Hi, Marjorie.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really wonderful to meet you, having read your own book, Lita.
Thank you. This
is a mutual author talk, which is really
right, fun for me.
Thank you.
Hi, Marjorie, and welcome to the show. Could you start us off by telling us what exactly hemiplegia is, please?
Sure. Put very simply, it's paralysis on one side of your body, not quadriplegia, it's hemiplegia, half.
Right.
And right side or left side.
Right, correct. It's left or right as opposed to up or bottom.
Correct.
And Marjorie, what is the difference between hemiplegia and hemiparesis?
I had to actually look up what hemiparesis was. I'm not a medical expert, but hemiplegia is partial or total paralysis. And that's what I experienced, my whole right side. Okay. Hemiparesis is muscle weakness, okay, or loss of strength,
okay,
which is what I now experience, except my right foot and my right ankle remain almost totally paralyzed.
Oh, okay. So I understand that hemiplegia is typically the result of damage to the brain from vascular conditions such as a stroke, or infections, injury, or congenital diseases. Could you tell me, or tell us and our listeners, what led to the hemiplegia in your case?
Well, my case, it was brain surgery. Your brain is an extension of the spinal cord, and it was to remove a life-threatening brain tumor, a meningioma, that I had.
Okay. I've heard of those. That's a terrible operation to go through. I'm glad you survived and you're still with us to tell your story.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Marjorie, going into the surgery, did the doctors mention that you might have some paralysis afterward? Was that something discussed with you ahead of time?
No.
Oh.
No, it was not. No, I knew the situation was serious. I wasn't sure I would survive. Any brain surgery is serious. Mm-hmm. And I nearly did not survive because of blood loss. It was a 12-hour surgery. I'd made a will and planned my funeral. But no, I heard no indication that I would wake totally paralyzed on my right side. The medical folks were evidently as surprised as well.
Oh, okay. Well,
what they told me was you can feel, which is what they found out. So there's hope that mm-hmm. you can recover. Mm-hmm. The downside is I could feel everything. Muscles are meant to move. Mm-hmm. And when they can't move, it's extremely painful. And that was a situation I lived with for months.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
And Marjorie, what assistance has your family and friends contributed to your healthcare journey? This is a massive undertaking that you had to go through.
I knew right away this was not something that was going to get fixed, and I'm going back to my old life. You're right. My family stepped in huge ways. My children were 10 and 14. My aunts and uncles sent me substantial financial gifts. I had been self-employed and suddenly couldn't work at all. My parents came to stay with my kids. I was a single mother. My former in-laws stayed with my kids. I've got a whole list if you want.
Yeah.
My older sister stood by me at the hospital, as did the rest of my family. My older brother fended off bill collectors very effectively and helped me figure out what social service resources I might be able to access. Yeah. My younger sister brought me to my Social Security disability hearing and periodically gifted me with funds. My younger brother, a physician's assistant, helped us navigate interactions with medical folks, so important, and put a railing on my upstairs. All my family live some distance, at least an hour or more from me. So the daily stuff, doctor's appointments, groceries, et cetera, were picked up by friends and church family willing to provide meals and transportation. And one new to me friend stepped up, took me grocery shopping every Monday morning, 10 o'clock for 7 years until I was able to start driving. I know. I have not forgotten any of these small and large moments of grace.
Well, it's great to have a support group. I mean, that is hugely important in somebody recovering from anything. So we're really happy to hear that you have that support.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And Marjorie, had you ever even heard of hemiplegia prior to this? Had any of your friends or relatives been affected by this condition?
Actually not specifically hemiplegia, but many of my family and friends have various chronic conditions they live with. I call them my chronic friends. And there's a section in my book that has a meditation on what that means to me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good that you're supporting them through your writing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's great.
So as a follow-up question to Jean, do you know how common hemiplegia is? Do a lot of people experience that?
I had to look that up. Again, I'm not a medical expert, but from what I read, it's relatively rare, affecting about one child in 1,000. 80% of the cases are congenital and 20% acquired. It can be an indication of stroke, which is extremely serious. And you may have talked to other people who have suffered strokes. There's a lot that can get done to alleviate stroke.
Okay, but 80% congenital, that's a big number.
That is a big number.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Cerebral palsy and other such. Yeah. It was surprising to me too. You hear a lot about concussion and brain injury. There's a whole brain injury association that I've been involved with. But things like muscular dystrophy, there's other things that can be congenital.
Okay, sure. All right. And how has hemiplegia affected your day-to-day life? Actually, I should back up a little bit. How many years ago has it been since this... since your brain surgery?
I've had a lot of practice feeling old. I was almost 37 when this happened, and it's nearly 30 years
right
now.
Okay. All right.
So like I said, I've had a lot of practice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So thinking back then, how mm-hmm. did it affect your life, and how did you grow over these years and learn and adapt, and how is it affecting your life now?
Sure. At first, I couldn't cross a room unaided. All those personal care things that you hear about specifically for people who are older, showering alone, bathing, dressing, brushing my hair, I could manage brushing my teeth with my left hand. All of those things were impossible for me to do alone at first. Walking inside or out required the use of a four-legged cane. Cooking was really not safe for me to do working to earn money. I had been a house cleaner, and you know, that was really not possible.
Right.
All these conditions have abated over the years. I can walk indoors unaided, climb stairs with railings. Mm-hmm. I can cook and bathe, and I work as a writer, editor, and writing coach. But I continue to have fatigue that limits my activities. Falling is a constant concern. That's why I say I've been able to practice being old for a long time. Heat sensitivity is which many people who suffer spinal cord injuries mm-hmm. suffer with.
Yes. Right.
That limits my outdoor activities, especially in warmer weather, which is for people who are outdoors, summer is the exciting time. It's not.
I understand that. Yep.
But indoors as well, if a room is overheated. So overheating, injury, and stress can bring on seizures. About mm-hmm. a third of people who have brain tumors, brain surgery, then acquire seizures.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's other causes
right.
as well.
Right, right.
But brain surgery has a relatively high number of people that end up with seizures. I have this under control through medication and lifestyle, mm-hmm. but I walk a tightrope every day to avoid getting overtired, overheated, overstressed. My life is kind of the speed of a turtle.
Okay. All right. Well.
Well, you have to do what's good for you.
Right.
What works for you.
Right. And moving slow.
What is that? Slow and steady wins
the
race.
Wins the race. Right. Thank you.
I think it's
pretty much.
It's benefited us because, as we'll talk about later, in your writing, you're very observant and lyrical in your storytelling. And I think taking things a little bit slower maybe enables you to take in more of what's going on around you and then transcribe it into your books, which we can then thoroughly enjoy. But as I said, we'll get to that in a little bit.
One other question about mm-hmm. how it's affecting your day-to-day mm-hmm. life now. Do you use things like dragon speak or other type things to write your books now? Or are you just typing left-handed?
Oh, that's an interesting question. No, I don't use, I'm familiar with dragon and other such. No, I do type, but one of the things with paralysis and recovery from that is that rhythm is ironically one of the last skills that can return. So I actually have a little meditation about learning to skip, which is a kindergarten readiness. It's rhythmic. And things with my hand are still delayed. So typing, I'm always reversing between left and right. My right hand doesn't have the same speed, doesn't catch up. So I'm always having to go and correct reverse letters. It's
okay.
annoying
okay.
to me, but I mean, it's not a huge thing. A lot of things can get fixed. So, you know, writing is all about rewriting.
Right.
Think
okay.
that's just the way it is. Days.
Yeah, that's yeah. true. That's true. Okay.
And I'm able to write from home. So I was able to send things by email, and I'm able to communicate a lot and send writing by email.
So you're doing it at your own speed, and then you have time to go back and correct, and that works for you.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
And
well, thank you for asking.
I have a...
It's a good question.
Marjorie, I have kind of an odd question. When you woke up after surgery and they realized that you were having paralysis on your right side, were there any interventions that were put in place at that time? I'm thinking of things that are tools and techniques that are used with individuals who have recently had a stroke and are living with, some issues of hemiplegia. Did they use mirrors with you or any of those kinds of techniques to help you relearn how to do things and encourage your recovery?
It's a good question. People always assume that you get physical therapy. I had what is called catastrophic insurance, which certainly paid for things, but physical therapy doesn't fit into that. Okay. I think I got 3 at-home sessions.
Oh.
I got sent home from the rehab hospital unable to walk.
Oh,
but
wow.
I'd had my 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I'd had my 2 weeks.
Okay.
So, I got a little bit of physical therapy while I was in the hospital, and then I got sent home to figure it out.
Hmm.
I have anticonvulsant medication, not too surprising, mm-hmm. to control the seizures.
Okay.
As I was saying, I had no health care. So most people say, oh, you had lots of physical therapy.
Right.
Well, no. But taking care of my kids and living life was my therapy.
Okay.
Opening windows,
mm-hmm.
making up my bed, hanging out clothes, squeezing the clothespins,
mm-hmm.
And of course, walking with friends and family. So I called it life therapy.
Okay.
Living life.
Yep.
Taking
yeah.
care of my kids.
Okay.
A lot of times people take all that stuff for granted. Mm-hmm. We don't stop and slow down and appreciate the little things, the day-to-day things. And it sounds like that's exactly what you did.
And you, it's...
It was exactly the emotional mm-hmm. things that I needed, because taking care of my kids really kept me alive. Mm-hmm. It was emotionally very devastating, and getting my seizures ignored by medical professionals for 18 months till I found the right words to say that they finally said, oh, that's seizures.
Mm.
And I almost didn't survive that.
Wow.
I'm
getting
so sorry.
Not listened to by medical
right.
people is devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked to many guests that have been through that type of a situation, and it's heartbreaking, but thanks to our podcast, we hope that the medical students out there are listening and will learn from this.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Yes. And Marjorie, so as part of your DIY recovery, did you put into place?
Yes. DIY recovery.
I'm
going to patent that.
A great phrase.
Did you use any alternative therapies? And I'm guessing if you weren't going, if they weren't prescribing physical therapy for you, then they weren't prescribing, massage therapy, but were you able to do, massage therapy at home or on your own, or acupuncture, or, do heat? Well, you said heat.
She's
going
to do acupuncture on her own.
Okay, don't do acupuncture.
No, we don't recommend it.
Don't recommend
it.
No,
to anyone.
I have tried all of those things.
Okay.
And, the acupuncture, I did get some acupuncture, didn't truly make any particular difference. Massage therapy, absolutely. There was something also called active release therapy that I learned about through my chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually helped with my balance, with freeing up the frozen muscles in my ankle somewhat. Okay. So I have better balance. So active release therapy, if you've got, it can also help things like carpal tunnel syndrome, a lot of different things, but it's a very specialized training, and that was helpful. Yes, ice and heat. When I fall, ice and heat are essential healing tools, but ice also helps interrupt the specific seizures that I have.
Oh, really?
They're partial seizures. They're called autonomic seizures.
Mm-hmm.
And it, for me, it feels like having heat stroke, which is excruciating. And the ice interrupts it and actually stops eventually the seizure. It's not instantaneous, but it's essential.
Nice.
And then I
good
also
to know.
Use... Yeah, for me, I don't mm-hmm. know about anybody else. But
it's certainly easy to try for other people.
It's not going to hurt.
Right, right.
It's surely not going to hurt. And then I use leggings and extra blankets over my legs. They help keep my leg spasticity
yes. mm-hmm.
from disturbing my sleep, which otherwise is a big challenge as well.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that with us. I'm going to switch gears a little bit now. Would you like to share with us what inspired you to start writing your series of books?
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to switch gears. I love to talk about medical stuff a lot. Kind of brings me back places, but I love to talk about that. And the series of books, I've always loved the outdoors. And the genesis of this whole series was a series of newspaper columns that I wrote. I've written for a local newspaper and other newspapers for over 20 years. And this series of columns was about outdoors places that the newspaper readers might enjoy visiting. So they were very, I call it now hyper local, extremely local. Mm-hmm. So I had a website that I had put together for my writing services. And I just had this sense that these nature columns might have some value. So I just put them up on my website, and visitors to my website kept finding these articles. They did search questions like, where's Joe's Rock? Well, it's a local hiking place nearby. After about 500 hits on my website for that one blog post, I said, you know, I think there's a local need. So I began researching, and this was before a lot of things were put up on the internet. We assume so much material is out there, and it is, but this was 2013, 10 years ago, not that long. And I had to go places like town halls and call up conservation offices and say, do you have any trails that I might be able to explore? So because of my own challenges, I limited myself to the places I could safely walk. Mm-hmm. There were places that I couldn't or didn't do well, quickly became obvious, those didn't go in the book. Mm-hmm. If I couldn't do it, I wasn't going to put it in the book.
Sure.
I knew how to self-publish books because I had helped others write their own books as a personal historian. So I learned the self-publishing world. So I started off just publishing a very modest book, 30 Trails, in that first edition. And just kept going, exploring new trails as a way to publicize the book on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And just doing that, publicizing the book, I realized I had enough to publish yet another book.
Oh,
so nice. Thankfully, my husband suggested the first title, Easy Walks in Massachusetts, something direct and simple. And the phrase, capital E, easy, capital W, walks, has become my brand.
Got it.
Nice.
Okay. And you mentioned that your husband had recommended that next title. I also saw that in your book that your husband has also been integral in reconning areas that you may not be able to access. I'm thinking of a portion of the book where you were talking about going along a trail and that there were fossils that one could see, but that was maybe a difficult area for you to explore. Could you tell us how you integrate information from others into your books as well?
That's a wonderful question, and I very much do integrate that. In fact, I have a whole Facebook group of 12,000 people or so now that I know. But it's a group, so members can actually contribute. And what I ask them to do is to tell us trail surfaces, and I define an easy walk as not too many roots, not too many rocks, relatively level, doesn't have to be flat, firm footing with something of interest along the way. Doesn't have to be paved. It can be a lot of things fit into that, but that's what the phrases I've been able to use that people light up and say, oh, or they say, no, this wouldn't be good. Mm-hmm. But having those phrases to articulate has been huge in being able to communicate what I need and what other people need as well. So people in this group that I started, we've got a whole database of local and more places that people can walk that are, quote, easy walks. Okay. And they provide an address or town and the trail surfaces, what's there. And the group is searchable. So it's truly a database for people to use.
So that's the name of the Facebook group is Easy Walks?
The Easy Walks group is Easy Walks, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and beyond.
Okay. I'm going to look that up.
And we're going to contribute because we recently took a trip to the San Juan Islands in Washington State, and I can tell you that the Lime Kiln Trail on San Juan Island is an easy walk, and the trails on Orca Island are
not so easy.
Just as you were saying, it's uneven, lots of roots, lots of rocks.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Lots of variation and yeah.
Half of the time you're walking at a 15 degree angle and yeah, it's So I can definitely see where you're coming from there and how amazing that type of advice would be for someone trying to head out there and take a lovely walk.
Absolutely.
That's the feedback that I've been getting. People seem to be very grateful. I've got people who've been recently injured. People who are visually impaired and have come to my group saying, this is so wonderful. My husband is blind and loves to get outdoors and we haven't known what to do.
That's great that you do that. It's
a nice feeling to feel like I have something to give back.
That's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what makes you want to keep going.
Yeah, and that's what makes us keep going back to your book.
Right. Marjorie,
I got that from your book too, Lita.
Did you?
Of just the importance of feeling like you have something to give back.
Oh, Everyone, Marjorie, it's mine and Jean's book.
No, that's okay. You don't have to talk to me. That's okay. I am happy to take a back seat. It's fine.
Marjorie, what advice do you have for somebody who's going to try trail walking for the first time or those that are heading back out on the first hike after an injury or illness?
A great question. I always urge people to take it slow. Be willing to explore, but don't have this one place that you're going to go and if it doesn't work, say, give up and go home. Have a plan B. If the location you hope to visit is not workable for your abilities, and sometimes you just can't tell unless you go out. So do what you can to educate yourself about a place prior to heading out. This is what my Facebook group hopes to offer people, is to give that education before people go out and then find they're disappointed. Bring along a friend or a family member who knows your challenges and can offer support if needed, and bring your camera or even just your cell phone. So to remind you to stop and appreciate your surroundings rather than hurry the experience.
Good advice.
Yes.
And what do you take on your trail walks? What are your favorite hiking poles? Do you use a GoPro? Do you use your cell phone? What do you do?
I haven't graduated to a GoPro yet. I think people would get seasick having it on my head. My husband's talked about it, but we might. But hiking poles for me are a given. We keep a pair in each vehicle. So if we decide to stop someplace to explore, I've already got that. So we keep a pair in each hand. I like to encourage people, especially if they've got more serious balance issues, get some soft handled. There's both hard handled and like squishy foam handled hiking poles. I find the squishier foam easier. There's videos out there showing you how to use the straps to take some stress off of your wrists. And then there's little rubber tips because they're really basically ski poles, those metal tips with baskets. I don't typically use the baskets unless there's snow, but there's rubber tips that you can put on them that are good for harder surfaces. You get a little traction if you're on pavement or on some bare rock.
Okay.
They'll keep the stick from sliding.
Oh, good.
So
good advice.
Yeah, and then I always bring ice with me keep it in a fanny pack or backpack, and bring water, small snack, a hat, layers of clothing, and of course, blaze orange in hunting season, because it's foliage season in New England now. And, you know, hunting is a fact of life, and they, people use the woods.
Yeah.
And you want to make it so you don't have to avoid the woods just because it's hunting season.
Okay.
Sing, talk, laugh, do whatever you need to make some noise.
Okay.
The hunters will know you're there.
Okay.
And I always bring a windbreaker, which is like a raincoat in case of weather changes.
Well, yeah, up in Massachusetts, in that area, you need to.
Absolutely.
It's 9 o'clock. It's raining. It's 10 o'clock. It's nice.
All right. So Marjorie, since you had your brain surgery several years ago, and you've obviously been living life since then, what tips or advice would you have for someone who was recently diagnosed with a chronic illness?
Sure. First of all, I would just express my own compassion for anyone who's facing that. Chronic illness does not go away. It's the definition of chronic.
Right.
And unlike sudden illness or injury that may likely resolve, your needs may continue on a level that can be emotionally devastating. We all like to feel like we're independent, that we can take care of ourselves, but in truth, none of us are completely independent. You need help to be born. You need help to die. You need help as a child, and we need help as adults. It's just part of life, and getting over that shame is a really important thing. So I urge those facing what may be their first experience consciously needing to ask for help to spread your net wide and make it easy for those you approach to say no if they're not able to help you right then. So having others you can list as possible helpers, but not leaning too much on any one person. I always assure any person that you ask for help that you have others, and that they need to be honest with you about when they can help, so you're able to ask them again when it might be a better time. And needing help is not shameful.
Yeah, that is great advice.
We've never heard that, but I love that advice.
Yeah, I think we could all use to hear it.
Yes,
more often.
Yes. Marjorie, thank you so much for joining our show today, and I'm sorry for that technical glitch that slowed us down. How can our listeners learn more about you? I already wrote down the Facebook group. I'm going to put that on our website. Do you have any other links that I could put out there for you?
Sure. My website is marjorieturner.com, M-A-R-J-O-R-I-E. And that's the best way to get in touch with me. There's all contacts there. I have a press kit with all sorts of recordings and links to other such, including my contact information.
Excellent.
Always happy to hear from you.
Excellent. And if you ever wanted to relocate the San Juan Islands off of Washington State, do not get hot.
Well, okay, they get warm.
We've talked about that, but my husband also finds getting chilly is not great for him.
Okay.
Probably. Yes, I'd love to visit. Yeah. I would love to visit. Okay. We actually went to Newfoundland this summer to try to be cooler, and they had a heat wave there in the high 80s, which was not 100 where we were at home, but it was still cooler, but was still very difficult for me. But we were still glad to make the trip. It was amazing.
Marjorie, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll make sure that we add links to your website and social media accounts, and we'll put stuff on our websites as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and TikTok by the same name.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.